Okay. Oh, hang on. I just have to do one thing. Are you good?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to turn the music down.
Roger.
Roger. Okay.
You can write people's names on the tablecloth.
Okay. Roger. Roger that.
Do we have clearance? Clearance? Okay. We're good to go. Let's do it. Happy Hour again from Uptown New Orleans. Hi, how you doing? I'm Grant Morris. Happy Hour is part of the family of shows on the podcast network itsneworleans.com. When you walk into a bar in New Orleans and you pull up a bar stool, you never know who's going to be sitting either side of you. What you do know is no matter what they look like, what they're wearing, if they just got out of a limousine or just got out of jail, they're going to be happy to talk to you. Because that's New Orleans and this is Happy Hour, a cocktail-fueled 60 minutes of random conversation with folks who have nothing in common. Other than we're all New Orleanians in a bar today, we're at the fabulous Wayfair on Ferrette Street, which is a couple of blocks down from Napoleon Avenue, where you can enjoy a four-hour happy hour here every single day and a brunch on the weekend that extends from sometime in the morning to sometime in the afternoon. I'm not exactly sure what hours they are, but during the happy hour, and this is the key phrase here, half price. All the drinks are half price during happy hour from 3 to 7 every day, which is fairly significant. 4 hours worth of half-price drinks. And all the appetizers at the bar are half price as well. So thank you for joining us. If you'd like to stick around for the next hour, I've got an incredible bunch of people around here today. Joy Clark is here on her first ever podcast.
My first one.
Nice.
That's the first thing ever you ever said on your first ever podcast was my first one ever.
My first one ever.
Is that what you're planning to say?
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Good job. Looking in the mirror last night and I was
you're
like,
practicing.
That's going to be
I'm going to say
one.
My first one ever. Well, you know what they say? You never forget your first.
Yeah, exactly. That's true.
Is that true?
I think
who
so.
Was the first person in your life that you remember?
Ooh, my mom.
Your mom's the first person you remember? Is she still with us?
Yes, she
Where
is
she today?
She's in Harvey.
In Harvey? Did you grow up on the West Bank?
I grew up on the West Bank. Okay, I grew up in Woodmere.
In Woodmere?
Woodmere. It's like the biggest subdivision, I think, in the country.
Wow.
It's huge.
Huh. Andrew Duhon knows a lot about the country because he travels around the country.
I know a lot about Harvey. I was trying to buy a car in Harvey today.
Just today?
Yeah.
You should tell that story.
Superior Honda? Where?
Oh, no. Oh, no.
it's inferior.
The spot on Lapalco
inferior
that has about
Dodge,
that 10 cars. And I went
I'm going to make you tell that story, but first let me introduce Thomas Cole.
Yep.
Thomas, welcome.
Thank you
happy
so much.
Hour. Nice to meet you. Thomas, when we say people have nothing in common, it's a bit of a misnomer today because we do have a lot in common. You two have a lot in common. Roger Johns and Thomas Cole are both producers of books. Mm. We have your books here. Thomas is the author of a book called, what is it actually called?
Standing in the Shadows, New Orleans in Focus. It's actually, one wouldn't call me an author. You'd say photographer because it's primarily a photography book.
So what does someone who puts together a book of photography is called?
A photographer.
You're still called a photographer?
I think
someone
so.
Someone who writes a book is called an author.
Published photographer, maybe.
Okay.
I don't know. You know, it's a question because people have used that word, but I've never associated with author with photographer.
Well, we have an author here. Roger Johns
That's
is
right.
an author. He's an acclaimed author, and he's the writer of the year or something like that?
Georgia Author of the Year.
Georgia Author of the Year, ladies and gentlemen.
Wow. All right.
Not just some year, but this year, 2018.
Correct.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
So you're from Georgia itself, from the state of Georgia.
I live there now, but I'm a native of Louisiana. I grew up in Alexandria.
Oh, really? And you moved to Georgia?
By a very long and winding, circuitous route, I did find myself in Georgia.
So how do we get to have you on Happy Hour today?
I have a publicist who lives in Baton Rouge,
okay.
who knows everything about everything in Louisiana, and
right.
she was the one that connected you and me.
Okay. Well, she did a good job.
She does an excellent job at everything she does.
That's really fascinating to think that we have people with any literary skills or abilities at all listening to the show. I wouldn't have picked that. I would have not picked our average listener as a literary purchaser. Are you selling these books? Are you trying to sell books? Is that why you're on here?
Well, yes. I'm trying to build a readership. I've got two out now and hopefully many more.
So what we're going to do for the next hour is we're going to do readings from these books.
Right.
Everyone's going to take a chapter. Are they on audible.com?
They are, you can get them as an ebook, but not as an audiobook.
That's interesting. Have you looked at, are you interested in that?
That's a decision that my publisher would make,
right.
Not me.
Gotcha.
Okay, well, how do we, who's the publisher?
Who's the publisher?
The publisher is Minotaur Books, which is an imprint of Macmillan.
So that's a pretty serious situation here, then.
Oh,
this
very.
This is like literature.
No, it's crime fiction.
It's crime fiction.
Yes. I
well,
think of it
so
as
is,
literature.
So is Dostoevsky, by the way, isn't it?
Yeah, different sort of crime fiction, yes. But I like to think of it as literary, but I'm on the mystery shelf in the bookstore.
So you don't call your, you don't call yourself a literary writer. What would you call yourself? A crime writer?
Crime writer, yes. Crime
is
fiction.
That, is that lower down the sort of pecking order of writers? Do people look down on crime writers if they're literary writers?
That depends on who's doing the looking. I put myself
well,
at the
like
top of the heap.
Truman Capote, say, would he look down? Or Ernest Hemingway? Would they look down on you as a crime writer and say, oh, the guy's just like...
Well, they're both up there, so they're both looking down on me whether they want
well,
to or
technically,
not.
Technically, we
but
don't
yes,
know where they are.
Yes, that's true. We don't know where they are. But yes, I would think that I'm outside. I don't know if I want to say up or down, but I'm outside the literary writing space, and I'm in the genre writing space. You know, like there's romance writers and they're crime writers, and I'm a crime writer.
Okay. So Andrew just took a look through Thomas's book. Andrew, you want to give us a review?
Yeah, really cool. It's
good.
It's amazing to me to see someone who is taking what you would call stills and telling a story with just a snapshot. It's really great.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
So Thomas, I see that you have a number of people who have written forwards to your book.
Yes, sir.
Among them, Chris Rose, who is one of the most respected commentators in New Orleans, for sure.
That he
and,
is.
And he gives this whole thing, it's a super rave intro here. He says that, well, this is a big deal coming from Chris. He said, your photos tell a story of who we are, how we live, what we love, and how we see ourselves away from the maddening glare of girls and boys gone wild. In other words, pictures that show what we really look like. So, is he really like a friend of yours, or did you pay him to write that? That's what I'm assuming.
I asked him afterwards when I read it, and I met him, I said, are you telling the truth or are you just exaggerating because, you know, you're doing this for me? And he said, no, it's the truth.
So you're friends with Chris?
No.
Okay.
I'm not
Option
friends with Chris.
Three. You didn't pay him. You don't know him.
I paid
Why
him.
Why did he do it?
I paid him.
Oh, you did pay him. Okay.
He's a professional writer.
Right.
I get paid to write as well.
But you said you're not a writer. You're a photographer.
There is some text in here that I composed.
So you did write some stuff.
I did write some things.
Okay, so what did you write in here?
I wrote an introduction, a general introduction, as well as some thoughts on color, because the color is so different than the black and white. I thought it deserved some perspective.
Are all the photos then, in black and white? I haven't
known. Oh, no. It's
color photos?
It's 65% black and white, 35% color.
Yeah.
And the color was so different, I thought it required a preface to introduce it.
Nice.
And introduce myself as well. And there's an afterword that's written that was the result of a long thought process over several months.
When you take a picture of a stranger, do you have to then approach them and say, hey, I've taken this picture, I intend to publish it, get a sign off or something?
Occasionally, when they verbally agree to, they don't care.
Mm-hmm.
There's not many people in New Orleans who care.
No,
right.
Yeah.
You know, they don't care about that. I mean, they're so used to photographers coming here.
Yeah,
right.
For one reason or another, people have asked me, is my picture going to be in a magazine? What magazine are you doing this for?
Uh-huh.
So
wow.
I tell them, no, I'm just doing a book, and who knows if it's going to make it in.
Right.
But
yeah.
Do you, Andrew's question is a good one, that you have to get people's permission? Do they want to be,
in
is there
theory,
a copyright issue?
It depends. It's not a copyright issue, but it's an issue with, if you have a full-on view of somebody's face, and it's instantly recognizable,
right.
In theory, one must, in fact, have them sign off on it.
So you need a release before, does someone,
in theory,
did someone publish,
correct, sir.
Did someone publish your book, or is it self-published?
It's me.
It's you. You
published
it yourself. Okay.
That's correct.
Okay, so are you looking to, would it make more sense to get a publisher? Or is it, you have more control if you do it yourself?
That's correct.
All right. So you have to listen, Roger. First of all, let's answer the question, seeing you are an author. How do we describe Tom? He's a guy who's written a book and got photos in it, so what does he technically call?
I would call him both, an author-photographer.
Ah.
I think that makes sense.
Yeah.
That's pretty clear.
What do you say, Joy? Okay, we're going to go with that. Author, photographer.
Well, I feel it, like, to be clear, he's authored his photography book.
Yeah. Well, that's why I think you can call him an author.
In the publishing industry would call him an author. The people who consume it would think of him as a photographer.
Okay. Mm-hmm. See, I didn't
know. See, both. Yeah. So you're a hyphenate. Or a double threat.
Like that.
Okay. So would you have a hyphen between photographer and author or a slash?
Slash.
Or would it be photographer or orthographer?
Writographer.
What's the last one?
Writographer.
Writographer.
We digress.
Because he's a writer. Right. Okay, yeah. That's a good one. Okay, so Andrew, I think you should tell everybody the story about what happened to you.
Real quick.
Yeah, this is a good story. Let's check this out.
Here's my day. Saw an ad for a Dodge Caravan. Really been thinking about a Dodge Caravan and a little touring outfit.
Now he's
we
got
need
a
some
family,
more room.
You know.
That's right.
Space.
No, it's and you know what? The Stow & Go seats on these Dodge Caravan, they're amazing. Anyway. So I find this great deal in Harvey. I go check it out. Van feels pretty good. Midas next door, where I'm going to check the vehicle out right before I buy it, and the dealership's fine with that. Bring it over there. He tells me all about why Dodge Caravans are the wrong call. I say, I understand, but there's a price difference between the right call and the Dodge Caravan. So he checks it out for me. Great guy. Definitely a straight shooter. Drives it. He says, yeah, you're right. Feels great. Drive straight. Maybe this is your vehicle. Then he plugs it into the computer. And, I got some airbag pings here. What's going on there? Must have been in an accident. But, you know, there's no lights on the dashboard suggesting anything's wrong here. He looks closer at the dashboard and uses his fingernail. Takes off some black paint where the airbag light is. Somebody painted over the airbag light.
How about that?
Yeah.
Now, isn't that almost like an offense, by the way?
It feels pretty shiesty, but the truth is, and he, the mechanic said it, he's like, you know, they bought this thing at an auction. There's no telling whether the auction did it or they did it, truth be told. Okay. So,
wow.
You know.
Did you tell the guys when you went back there? And said,
oh, he was right there. I said, look, there's paint over that airbag thing. We're out here, so if you want to drive it back to your dealership, you know, he did so.
That is pretty Stevie.
So, did you buy it?
good question. Yeah. So he's still looking. So if anyone's listening to this and they're selling a what?
Chevy Astro van is what we're looking
Chevy
for at this
Astro
point.
Van.
That's the right vehicle.
Okay. Yeah. So this is for getting on the road with the band and throwing everything in there.
That's right.
And when you're driving around normally, like coming here, do people think you're driving like a soccer mom van, or does it look not like that?
Oh, if I were to get the Dodge Caravan?
Or any of these. Do they all they look like...
Well, you know, I think we all remember the Dodge Astro van. It looks like a living room on wheels, kind of. It's just a big toaster box, but it's kind of got this classic look.
So it's not a soccer mom type van.
It's not. See,
it's not the one with the automatic doors.
The standard issue band touring van these days is a Chevy Express 2500 van. That's what you see, the white vans generally.
Okay.
That's what bands are touring in. Astro van, smaller.
That's like a...
And we're
that's,
just...
That's like a child molester lean. Type van.
Not quite. That's the Econoline, is what you're thinking.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's...
Yeah.
This is
free candy van's usually an Econoline.
Okay, so this is something a little bit down from the child molester.
It can be a bigger... Okay. Yeah,
I told
vehicle.
You he was going to say something wrong. Yeah.
Okay, so this is a sort of an ugly-looking thing to drive around in. This can be your primary vehicle?
Beauty is in the eye of the beholder.
That's true, okay.
Yeah.
But is this going to be your primary vehicle? So you didn't
it would. That is, hence the Astro van instead of the 15-passenger.
Because
that's a guzzler
driving
the Rouses and back. You don't need that.
Yeah,
you
right. Because most of the time you're not on the road. Most of the time you're, I guess it's 50-50.
I think that's wrong. I think most of the time
true.
I am.
It's the other way around. Yeah, it's true. Mm-hmm. What about something you can sleep in? Like, you know what would be cool?
An Astro van.
Just the front of an 18-wheel, you know, that's like the cab.
Huh.
Just the actual truck.
Where do you put the gear?
I don't know. Well, they got that thing on the back. They got that cab thing.
Oh, I don't
think
that's enough.
Where the bed is. No, it's probably
Yeah, but then you
enough.
Got an engine that's
be
running
fun,
enough
though,
gas to haul tons.
Yeah. I just think it would be a great thing
tons.
To have. Joy, what are you driving around to your gigs?
I've got a Honda Civic 2005.
Mm-hmm. So what do you put in there?
I put my guitar amp, my pedal board, my poster, my... mic stands, all that stuff.
All that stuff. So that's what you take to a normal gig.
Yeah. Okay. That's what I take to my normal gigs.
And do you have merchandise? Do you have baseball caps and t-shirts?
not yet. I'm working on merchandise. I do have some CDs, but yeah. But
so
not,
what's your CD
like
called?
Big stuff. So my CD, I released a single some years ago.
What, a single?
Yeah, it's a single,
just one
but it has a couple songs on it. It has a B-side on it.
On the CD. So you recorded a two song.
A 45, so to speak.
Yeah, right.
It's two songs, but recently I added another song just to kind of boost it.
Make it look like you've got something going on. Well,
then it becomes an EP.
It's, that's right. Exactly.
Right. You got the lingo.
Like, so it's called Come With Me. And okay. It's,
is that sexual?
It's not sexual.
Okay.
It's like, come hither, like come
okay.
with me.
Did you think when you wrote Come With Me that you were thinking it maybe?
No.
Like,
now,
did anyone mention
now,
that except me?
Well,
I
actually,
hope someone else has me.
Now whenever I say the title, yeah, like after I explain the story, people are like, oh, is it sexual? It's not sexual.
So everybody asks that.
A lot of people ask.
Right, thank you very much.
It's not just you. Okay. Grant. It's not just
so
you.
So have you thought about changing the title? Seeing no one,
no.
Seeing there's no physical. Is there
well,
a physical
scene? It's like, come with me, don't worry. So it's
even
it's,
better.
It's kind of like.
Then the second one, as a sequel, you could have Come With Me Again.
Oh, you had this guy driving a child
really
in a Western van, you know, and now you get into this.
You warned me. Yeah.
Come with me. Is that it? You can
this
call.
Is going to be the final interview that just reveals you to everybody.
That's right. This is the end. So how's it? Is anyone buying it?
Yeah, you know, I physically sell it. It's right. it's not on Spotify or anything.
You don't
yet.
Have it on Spotify.
It's not on there. It's pretty. Hmm. It's
how
pretty
am I supposed
aged,
to hear it?
But
I can't
actually
steal
have
it
some off. With me.
No, but
you
I mean,
can't
if I
steal it, you can steal
you
it from
can't steal
me,
it anyway. It's not on no. YouTube or anything.
There's some live performances on YouTube.
Right.
So that's even
so
better.
So what songs are on it?
It's a song called Come With Me, and then there's Another Lonely Night, and recently I put a bonus track on it just to kind of boost it to
right.
to fundraise for my full-length album.
Okay, so you're working towards a full-length
yes.
album. Okay,
yes,
cool. So
yes.
where are you playing around town?
I have a regular gig at Cafe Negril
on, oh, yeah.
Frenchman Street on Saturdays in the
how
afternoon.
Is that? Oh, that's
it's you
nice.
Know I call anyone? It the listening room because I'm a songwriter, so I'm not one to do so like a whole set of covers to just get people to come in. Yeah. So I make sure to set the mood for, hey, you're listening to Joy Clark.
Well, mm-hmm. afternoon you know? Must be actually pretty good because
it's good.
People
it's
are more likely to listen to you rather than
yes.
being totally plastic.
Yes, I embrace afternoon because I'm yeah. an afternoon person.
Mm. Well, this is the afternoon right now. So what about
yeah.
playing something?
Sure.
You
I
feel
can
like
play
playing
something?
Something? What are you going to play?
Do you want to hear Come With Me since you
yeah.
talked about it?
Oh, yeah, of course we do. Do you want us to do any sound effects?
No.
Okay.
Let's see. How am I going to do?
Do you want to put that under?
Yeah.
Okay.
Can I take this off?
You can take them off. Yeah. Just talk about headphones if you're listening to us and wondering what Joy's taking off. Okay.
Come with me, and we can share all our hopes and dreams. Take my hand, and we don't even have to have a plan. So don't worry.
Fuck!
That was beautiful, actually. I got to say, wasn't it, Andrew?
That was great. Yeah, enjoyed that.
Do you guys know each other?
No, first time.
It's first time meeting Andrew.
Yeah, and that's Andrew's guitar as well. What'd you think of Andrew's guitar? Nice.
Action's a little high, right? It's a little
the
tough.
The action is high. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The gauge is pretty
It's pretty
hard on your fingers.
So I felt it. It was like, oh,
yeah, it's
okay.
A lot. I usually play slide with it, which you like it to be up, up, up. But then when you fret, it's like, ooh, it's a lot. You know?
Right. Oh, is this mine?
Yeah, it's yours? Yeah, yeah. Put those on. That was really beautiful.
Thank you. That was actually the first song I wrote.
Nice.
I was a freshman at the University of New Orleans.
You were?
Yeah, and I had a crush on somebody.
Who was it about?
And it was about a guy named Brandon, actually.
Brandon?
Yeah, I've never told anybody the exact name, but hey, it's podcast,
shout out to Brandon.
Right?
Yeah.
You think he's listening today?
No.
Where is he today, Brandon?
I have no idea. Where Brandon is.
Well, C-Rock can find him probably in about 13 seconds if you'd like to give us his whole name.
No,
what's his other name, Brandon?
That's it, Brandon.
We're not telling Brandon who. Okay, so did anything come of it?
For a little while.
Okay, so that's cool. Did he know about the song?
He did know about the song. I'm not sure. But
wouldn't you love someone to write a song about you?
I would.
Roger, come on.
Joy could write a song. She's beautiful.
Thank you so much.
Joy could write a song about both you guys.
I mean, but if you commission somebody to write a song about you, that's not the same as somebody unsolicited writing a song.
They have to be inspired by how fabulous you are.
Right.
Like Brandon was.
Yeah, he was a cool guy.
He was. Who came after Brandon?
Oh,
is it alphabetical? Charles? There's loads of people. I don't know if that's what you intended to say. Exactly. I'll let you have that again. Who came after Brandon?
Oh, it was I don't know. I don't know. I can't remember now.
Are you in a relationship
now? No, I'm not.
You're not just looking to date anybody?
I'm just...
Or are you happy to be by yourself?
I just moved into my own place not too long ago, so...
Perfect.
Just been a life change, so I'm just going to focus on
Where are you?
Writing.
What part of the city are you?
I'm in Broadmoor.
In Broadmoor, okay. Cool.
I'm in Broadmoor, yes.
Okay. So did you just break up with somebody, or...
Something like that.
Right.
But
so
it's
you're in the phase of I'd rather be by myself.
It's pretty amicable.
I never liked him anyway.
It's amicable.
Okay. That's good.
All
right.
It's all good. Thank you.
That is good. All right. So, Thomas, did you grow up in India, did I read?
No, I didn't grow up in India, but I went there when I was quite young.
From where?
From California.
Okay. What part of California did you grow up in?
Northern California, on the peninsula, south of San Francisco.
Okay. That sounds like a cool place. I wouldn't know.
It was nice, and then I went to Berkeley, and I lasted 6 months at Berkeley, and I wanted out, and I left.
Why did you drop out of Berkeley?
I just wanted to get out of the country.
That you really hated America?
It wasn't like that. Our culture was so polarized at that point. I mean, this was 1969.
Really?
And I'd met a friend of my older brother's who had just returned from India and the Seychelles Islands, and he'd been traveling with some other friend of my brother's who was a fugitive from this country who later became a psychedelic guru, a fellow by the name of Terence McKenna. And anyway, this friend
Come on. You know Terence McKenna?
Oh, yeah. He was a friend of...
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
That's cool.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so can you just go back...
I mean, he's Terry McKenna to me.
So he's one of your friends, though?
He was. He passed away.
He's gone, right.
Yeah.
That is pretty cool. Yeah. So just take us back a little bit to 1969. You used the word polarized, which is the word we hear now all the time.
I've often tried to think, is it more polarized now than it was then? I'm not sure. I think that there was a lot more core issues about which people were going to war over, literally.
What were the two poles at that point?
I mean, there was the war in Vietnam going on, and this country was just like, you know, nuts.
Now
Nixon got elected. John Mitchell was the attorney general persecuting and prosecuting John Lennon and all these other people who were like spokesmen for the, you know, who were hip and, you know, and out of the mainstream.
So,
and I just wanted out. I knew that I was dissatisfied, but I was... My brother called me up and he said, come up to Berkeley. A friend of mine just got back from India. You should meet him. I said, okay. So I drove up, I walk in, and this friend of his is squatting on top of a small wooden table with a water pipe in front of him, smoking some pot. And yes, we all smoked some, but behind him, hanging on the wall, was a Tibetan tanka. And I'd never seen any of these religious paintings previously. And I just kept on looking at it, and I finally asked him, I said, where'd that come from? What is that? And he told me the story on it. I said, okay. And I kept on looking at it, and I said, whoever painted this had a completely different way of looking at the world. And I want to see that way. I want to experience that perspective. Alternative reality is how I termed it in my mind at the time.
And you're totally high as hell at that point.
Yeah. Okay. Of course.
That's a life-changing moment, and you still remember it.
Oh, yeah.
Do you think you would have got there without the pot?
Oh, yeah. It was the Tonka.
It was the art. So can you describe what that looked like a little bit? The paint?
The Tonka, it was a Kassar figure, a mounted warrior guardian figure with all this fiery stuff going on around and this, you know, guardian of the faith, guardian of the faithful. Mm-hmm. And he's got a spear in his hand and a shield and that sort of thing. And it's just some beautiful thing that was just, you know, clouds, all this, you know, full of this Tibetan sort of style of art with this one mounted horseman in the center of it.
Wow.
And I just thought that it was from outer, you know, it was different. And I wanted to go to where.
So what happened? You got on a plane or?
On my 19th birthday, I went to the university for 2 quarters for 6 months.
Yeah.
And I quit. And I worked the summer at the only job I ever had and went to India.
Wow.
I flew on my 19th birthday, I landed in London.
On your 19th birthday?
Yes.
What date is your birthday?
September 12th.
September 12th. What year is this? 1969?
70.
1970. Wow. Okay. By yourself?
Yeah.
All right?
Mm. Yeah.
So you're in London. You get off the plane.
Got off the plane.
What do you do?
There was a friend of my brothers and sisters who had a place in London. Stayed with him for a couple nights. Took the ferry over to the continent. Went up to Amsterdam for a couple days. Got on a train and went to a small place outside of Milan called Pavia, where another old high school friend was studying genetics at the University of Pavia because they had such records of the families, it was all recorded. Yeah. And then stayed with him for 2 days, and got on a train for Istanbul.
Holy shit, that sounds so great, doesn't it? What do you think, Joy? Would you do something like that?
You know, my first flight was to Germany, like my first flight ever.
Wow.
I mean,
it's a long one. So you have to go somewhere.
But I'm just saying.
You could have gone to Chicago.
Exactly. I could have gone out. Well, technically it was Atlanta because the connection was Atlanta. But,
Oh, right.
You know,
that's true.
I'm always one for travel and going places where people don't know me.
What was the first thing you said on the plane when you got on the plane? This is my first flight ever. This is my first podcast.
I was more writing. I didn't say too much.
Who did you go with? By yourself or with the plane?
I was alone. I went to Germany alone. Well,
as an experiment?
Not an experiment, please. No, I have a first cousin that's German. She's Black American and German. My uncle was in the Navy.
She's Black American and German. Is that three different things?
She's Black American.
She's
African American. Okay. Yeah, she's Black
she's
American.
African-American,
yeah,
and she's German.
Yeah. And
how do you get to be both of those?
Well, my uncle was in the military in the 70s or 60s, late 60s, and
stationed
he was
in
out
Germany.
In Germany. And he had her, but he never brought her back. But she was adopted by a family. And I got her address
He left her?
Yeah, he didn't bring her back. So,
How weird is that?
So,
why didn't he leave her with her mother?
I don't know the story. I have no idea. But I knew I had a cousin.
Do we have her phone number?
This is
a pretty weird story right here.
No, it's an interesting story. But
sure
I always knew that I had a German cousin. I have a love for foreign languages. So
you speak a bit of German?
Ich kann ein bisschen Deutsch sprechen. Yeah,
okay. And how did you learn that? While you were there?
I was homeschooled. So
okay, when I took a liking, better and better. You were homeschooled
exactly.
on the
I was
West
homeschooled
Bank.
On the West Bank. Yeah, my dad was a public school teacher. I was homeschooled.
No, hang on.
Wait a minute.
It's a wealth of things. I know.
That's a real statement.
I know.
Man,
I know.
This is getting crazier and crazier. Your dad was an actual school teacher and didn't let you go to school.
Well, it was one of those choices that they made. It was more of a spiritual thing. They felt like.
What, some sort of religious thing you mean?
It was more of we feel like. God is leading us to homeschool you all, and instead of having
God, it was homeschool and not kill you or something.
Exactly. I mean,
that's how they kill kids. These crazy people. They say God was. I heard voices and I had to gas everybody.
It was just a parental choice, and that's what we did.
And did God make the right choice, or was it actually safe?
It was okay. I mean, I don't know if I would make the same choice, but
right. How many brothers and sisters have you?
I have four. I'm the youngest of five.
You're the youngest of five.
Yeah.
And they were all at home, being homeschooled.
Yeah, four. Some of my siblings went to school for a little while, but yeah.
So your dad goes off to work in the morning to teach kids.
Yeah.
And your poor mom has to stay home with five kids.
She's a homemaker.
And teach them.
At one point it was her teaching, but then we had correspondence learning. So it was like I was technically in high school in Florida, at a Christian school in Florida. So it was correspondence. It was correspondence before correspondence was cool.
What religion are we talking about here?
Non-denominational Christian.
Non-denominational Christian. I didn't even know you could do that. Did you know about that, you guys?
Yeah.
You can do it.
Well, you're actually a college professor yourself, right?
Retired. Yes.
Roger.
Right.
Teaching what?
I was teaching business law, employment discrimination law, and international business transactions. The ultra-exciting stuff.
I wasn't expecting any of that. Say those again. Business law.
Business law, employment discrimination, and international business transactions. All the really exciting stuff.
But how do they get to be joined up? Discrimination and international business relations?
All different courses, right?
Yeah, all different courses. Yeah.
What's the connection between those three? Just your interest in
all
of
those? Well, as an academic, you have a certain amount of freedom to choose the areas that you're interested in teaching and researching. Mm. So over a career of 20 years, things can get a little stale and a little boring, so you have to shift gears every now and then. So when one would get a little too heavy, I would set it down and pick up another one that looked interesting.
And then when you went home at night, you'd be secretly writing a book.
Attempting
a crime
to.
Story.
Yes, but as I was writing those books, the first one, like a good academic, I was writing what sounded like a textbook, so it was so boring.
Oh, really?
No one was going to want to read it. Even I wasn't going to want to read it.
So how did you teach yourself to write better?
You
read a lot of Stephen King stuff?
I do. I read. He does some things that are just absolutely amazing, and he's able to consistently do them and very easily do them. So when you see that sort of magic, you want to read those books as if they're textbooks to see... You know, I can see what you did. Okay, how did you do it?
So what does he do that makes him so successful?
Well, I don't know that I can diagnose that perfectly, but he is able to draw you into the time and the place and the people very quickly and make you bond with them. And because you know what sort of books he writes, that these are horror books, you know that as soon as you grow to like these people and their place and their time, he's going to pull them apart. In a bloody way, one fingernail at a time, right. And it's like passing a wreck on the highway. You can't look away.
Mm. That's the trick. So the trick is to establish somebody who you like.
Yes,
and
then
destroy
challenge them. Or challenge them.
Right.
Yes.
Then what? But you're as a crime, so you have to come up with a crime.
Yes.
You have to come up with a bloody murder.
Or something. Yes.
So what are these books called? Tell us about these books.
Well, the first one. Is Dark River Rising.
Okay.
They both take place in Baton Rouge, and the main character is a female police detective named Wallace Hartman.
Okay, so this is a Baton Rouge, like a series now.
It is.
You're like the Dave Robichaux of...
Right.
Well, she is. Wallace Hartman.
Yes. I think of her that way. Thank you.
Isn't there a radio reporter, Thomas, on WRKF in Baton Rouge called Wallace something?
Yes. I don't know his last name, but
it's her.
Really
it's
cool.
A woman. I'm Wallace.
They are
something.
A political correspondent.
Yeah, that's the correct transgender nomination.
It's 2018, Grant.
Get on board with it. Yeah. Okay, so there's someone called Wallace somebody or other. You guys ever listen to WRKF in Baton Rouge?
No, I don't.
No.
Driving around? No. Wallace Watkins, maybe? Is that it? Watkins? I don't know.
You got Thomas.
She could get in touch with her.
Anyway,
tell her about her sister in crime.
So anyway, sorry to digress there. Wallace. So, it's a great name, Wallace Hartman. I like
it.
Has it got two N's?
Just one.
Hartman is a good name.
Great. Yeah, you're right.
Okay, so Wallace Hartman is a cop?
She is. She originally started out as a...
What was the question?
No, you got the name right.
Wallace Watkins. It was Wallace Watkins. Okay. It is Wallace Watkins. Let's call her up.
Yeah.
Okay, so Wallace Hartman is a cop in Baton Rouge. Why did you pick Baton Rouge as the most interesting place in the...
I get asked that question, and I can't remember. The most intense 10 years of my life occurred in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. I grew up in Alexandria, went to Catholic school from kindergarten through high school, and when I got to college at LSU in Baton Rouge, it was a completely different world. I'd never seen anything like that. And the years in college and in law school and working in between and afterwards were very, very intense. And it changed me as a person. So when I started writing these books, they sort of set themselves there. It was not a conscious decision on my part to do it. It just seemed like, well, these are dangerous stories in a very interesting place. Yeah, this will work. Everything else about the book's changed.
Honestly, I have never heard anybody say Baton Rouge is a very interesting place.
Well,
I've never heard anyone say
have
it.
Have you spent a lot of time in Baton Rouge?
No.
It's a fascinating
it
place.
Is.
It is.
I've never actually heard anyone say that, though.
But
you're
it's
the
true.
First person I've ever heard say Baton Rouge is an interesting place. I've heard people say it's a place where they go to work or there's a good restaurant, maybe, and that really barely, actually.
So it's the first time for you today as
how
well.
How about that?
Yeah.
It's my first.
Perfect.
So do you still feel that about Baton Rouge?
Oh, I do. And if as long as my publisher will want to publish these books, I'll write them and set them in Baton Rouge.
Okay. So the first one is Dark River Rising.
Yes.
And that was and then what's the next one is called?
River of
Secrets.
So yes.
They both got the word river in them.
Yes.
Okay, so... The River of Secrets is the new one that made you Georgia Writer of the Year.
No, Dark River Rising is the book that made me Georgia Author of the Year.
Okay, so that's the first one.
Yes.
But I thought you were Author of the Year this year.
I am, but they used the books that were published at the time the award was given.
So they're a year behind in Georgia?
Well...
It's like Mississippi.
No. No.
I'm from Alabama. We're about 20 years behind.
The award is for 2018, but it was for books that were published during the calendar year of 2017.
Okay. Ah. Is that like the Emmys or the Grammys? Yeah, is that how they do it as well?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
There's a cutoff date.
Okay. So this book, the new one, Dark River Rising, is that the new one?
This is the old one.
That's the old one. So the new one, River of Secrets.
Yes.
That could be a contender for next. So you could be
could
next
be
year's
time.
Georgia. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Sure.
Could you?
Could. It happens.
Cool.
Every now and then.
All right. Well, that's exciting.
Yeah.
So do you get any, what do you get for being Writer of the Year in Georgia? You get some sort of a Roger Johns Day or something?
I got a big, a trophy, a big glass trophy with my name etched on it.
That's cool.
I got a roll of stickers, gold emblems that say Georgia Author of the Year that I can put on the books when I sell
that's
them.
Cool.
Nice.
I've gotten interviewed several times, invited to various conferences. Because this has happened, so it's kind of a cool thing.
More attractive to women?
Well, I don't know because I don't pay attention to that. I'm happily married for many years.
Big deal. When you go to one of those things, are there bunches of women hanging out?
Fawning over you.
Yeah, wanting to get your quote-unquote autograph?
Well, there are always women at these events, and I've never experienced any fawning yet. But there's a running joke in the Johns household because I do have a lot of friends in the writing community. And many of them are women, and people say, so where did you meet her? I said, well, in a hotel, so I've met all these women in a hallway at a hotel, but it's only because the conferences take place frequently in hotels, and, that's where they are. But
these guys are on stage playing, right? So there's always a lot of, there's people attracted to people who...
Yes, and in the music business, there's fawning all the time, all day, every day. In the writing business, I don't think it's not happening to me anyway.
You haven't noticed it? Okay.
No.
Do you have fans? So you have a fan club or anything?
Well, I don't know if I have a fan club. I have readers, and I have people that correspond with me via email, and I see people a lot of the time at these conferences from time to time, some of them over and over again.
So they do follow you around?
Some, yes.
That's called groupies.
Well, not stalking, not groupies, just people who sort of, they're readers. I like to think of them
as readers.
It's
a very nice way of putting it. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's very cool to have a following, though, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
That must be great. Why did you quit academia? Did you just get sick of it, or did you been there long enough to get a pension? Or what?
No, I did it. I did it for almost 20 years, and I was. I got to the point where I didn't have the same interest level in it that I did before, and I thought that would be a good time. If you're messing around with people's lives, so to speak, as a teacher.
Trying to inspire them.
You want to be fully committed to that. You don't want to hold back anything. So I thought, well, it's time to go. So I did.
So now you're, sorry, that's been very fair.
Thank you. Well, I've tried.
You know, that's very thoughtful.
Are you in the writing process right now?
Yes.
And are you regimenting the process, or do you kind of wait till it calls you, or?
There's no calling.
Yeah.
There are voices in my head that tell me to do things from time to time. Like in this book, in the first book, the main character, Wallace Hartman, was originally a male character, and this voice came to me one day and said, no, you need to have a woman at the wheel in this book. So I changed it, and I joined a women's writing group. They were gracious enough to take me in, and for a year or something, I went took lessons on how to write a female character.
Nice.
From this group.
What was one of the first lessons you learned?
Well, I don't want to sound stereotypical, so I want to be very careful how I say my words, but the things that they taught me, which, by the way, changed me as an individual, were that men and women are equally emotional, but women tend to deal with their emotions in real time, whereas men tend to put that off until it becomes explosive. And if you really want to write this character as an authentic character, you need to start thinking things and become self-aware enough that when you have an emotional reaction to anything at any depth, that you're paying attention to that and you're thinking about it and formulating your reaction to it, and instead of letting it drive you when it blows up in your face.
That's
later.
Pretty interesting. Yeah. And does Wallace Hartman, as a person in a male-dominated world who is a cop, have to tamp that down, that feminine side of herself, to be successful?
Well, no. I have engineered the book in such a way that she is able to deal with these things. So even though it's crime fiction, there is a literary dimension to it because you are in her head for quite a bit of the time.
Hello, I thought you said it wasn't literary.
No, I said I feel that it's that way, although on the bookshelf, it's going to go into the mystery section. I feel it's a literary book,
so
but I don't think I'm considered.
You feel that you're creating literature.
I believe that.
And everyone else just calls you a crime writer. Have you thought about writing something that's not crime? That's like a serious...
I don't know that I have the skill to do something that takes me away from this. There's a certain piece of me that feels very, very at home writing crime fiction.
Do you? Is there a certain amount of hours a day that you intend to write?
Yes. I get up in the morning and I do the promotion and administrative side of the business. In the middle of the day, I do housework, you know, the cooking, the cleaning, and all of that stuff. And in the evening, when I'm tired, I write. I find that when I'm tired, I do better because the logic part of my brain is a very stern taskmaster, and I have to wait until I'm tired for that to shut up so I can do something.
And how long do you give yourself for that span of tired writing, so to speak?
Until I'm done.
As long as it takes,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what time of the night do you start?
Sometimes it's 9 o'clock, sometimes it's 2 or 3 in the morning. It just depends.
Wow.
2 or 3 in the morning, that's usually when...
So tell me, how long did it take you to write the second book?
Nine months. The first one took 9 years. The second one took 9 months.
Okay, that's
so. How long is the third one knocking off in 9 days?
Nine weeks.
No. I think 9 months is a good template for me now. Okay. I learned a lot doing the first.
Like a baby. That's 9 months gestation period.
Yeah. Right.
Hey, talking of creativity, Andrew, you want to play something?
I'll play you something.
Yeah. Here we go. All right. Hang on. And then when we come back from this.
All right, was it Thomas over there?
Correct.
Right? I want to hear, have you ever taken ayahuasca before, Thomas?
I have not.
Good question, Thomas. Are you both cool, Thomas?
If you were friends with Terrence McKenna, I figured that might be part of the...
I've had DMT.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'd love to hear about that after
okay.
the song.
Let's talk about drugs when we come back from the song. All right. Good. Good work, Thomas. What exactly is DMT, Sam?
Dimethyltryptamine.
What do we call it?
It's the active ingredient that's part of the ayahuasca plant, and it's extracted in a, you know, a synthetic version. Well, yes, and quite powerful. And
the businessman's lunch trip.
Another drink? Hey,
yes,
Jill.
Sometimes people who take it in a group all have the same experience.
I'm not familiar enough with all of this because groups. I've never done anything with a group.
There was a researcher at the University of New Mexico Med School who documented aspects of this years ago.
I've never heard of groups doing DMT together. Ayahuasca trips, yes, but not DMT.
Now there's ayahuasca tours. You can book for 10 days and go to
in Costa Rica,
and tour
Peru,
and take ayahuasca.
Yeah. So what is it supposed to do? It's supposed to get you in touch with your real
self? One friend of mine who's really a an old school hippie, she went to Peru with her husband for an ayahuasca trip, and she didn't even go to Machu Picchu. What are we thinking about here?
Can't you just take the ayahuasca in your house? I mean, why do you have to go to Peru to do it?
Because it's prepared by the shamans and blah-de-blah-de-blah.
So you spend a long time wandering around India, like seeking truth.
I wandered India, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Nepal.
So just get this in perspective. How long were you there for?
16 out of 20 years. Between 1970 and 1990, I spent 16 out of 20 years in Asia. Occasionally, I'd come back. I spent one out of the middle of that. There was 5 years straight where I never came back.
Yeah. So that you must be a completely different person than the person who left. And the person, completely different person to all of us, I'm assuming.
You know, my daughter has a photograph of me taken in Kandahar, Afghanistan, southern Afghanistan, when I was 19. And I look at that guy in that photograph and I say, I recognize that person. He hasn't changed that much. Right. And that, you know, there's just... attitude, a little bit of attitude. Was
Was your daughter born in?
In Thailand. Her mother's Thai.
And are you still together with her?
No.
So she didn't leave her in Thailand like some people's families.
No.
Left their kids in Germany. So you were married in Thailand, or you?
We were married actually in Nepal. Okay. I met her in Thailand. I was doing business in Nepal. I'm in with the antique carpet and textile trade.
Oh, so you ended up in business in India. Despite the fact
I
you're
was
a hippie,
always in business.
You're a hippie from California. You went to India to find himself when you ended up in business.
I didn't go to India to find myself. I went to India to find a different reality.
To get out of here.
To get out of here.
You weren't searching for yourself.
I wasn't searching for anything.
You were just looking to get the hell out of America.
Yes.
So that's interesting. So you ended up being a businessman in India.
A businessman in Asia. I ended up in Afghanistan. I spent a lot of time in Afghanistan and would come down to India for quote-unquote holiday in the wintertime when it was snowing there.
Right.
And
what business were you in? Textiles, you said.
Antique carpets and textiles, correct.
Antique carpets.
Correct.
So you're an Indian rug merchant.
No. Central Asian.
Central Asian rug.
The only
merchant.
Old rugs that come from India are Mughal rugs, and they're, 17th century, and they're like out of this world and expensive and out of my league. I'm a tribal rug dealer.
When you hear about rug merchant people, I always think of them. I put them in the same category as the West Bank car salesperson.
Correct.
Who tried to sell
Android. That's me.
Is that? Is that how people think of you? Or how you don't think of yourself like that, obviously.
Well, that's why I call it textile art.
Textile sounds much better than rug merchant, right?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, textile art.
And the thing is, I don't have rugs that you would ever put on a floor. I've got rugs. I've got things, weavings, that are put on walls.
So rugs is a bit of a misnomer, too.
It is.
I played a gig in Smithville, Texas a few days ago, and there was a shop underneath the venue, and it was just a craft shop, and there were some lovely... woven tapestry-looking things.
Uh-huh.
And it was nice. But then I read the tag, and it said, yada yada, horse blanket. And it became vastly more valuable because it's like the blanket you put under the... It's saddle blanket.
Right, that's under the saddle. Okay.
Like, come on. I want that blanket now.
I've dealt on these things. I've written two books on antique Tibetan rugs. And
would you call yourself an author of...
That's called being an author.
An author. Okay.
So you've written
two books on Tibetan rugs.
Correct, sir.
What are they called?
What is it?
River of Rugs?
No, Dreamweavers. Dreamweavers and... God, what is the second one? It's put out by the Rubin Museum of Art in New York City.
Come
I was commissioned
with me,
to write it.
Dreamweaver.
No, Patterns of something. I can't even remember.
You can't remember the name of your own book?
No.
C-Rock will tell you that.
I was hired to write. I was just a hired gun.
Well, you had a pretty interesting life, isn't it?
Very.
Man, alive. What are you doing in New Orleans? Just taking photos, or are you doing something else too?
Enjoying the ambiance.
You've made enough money from the textile business? To
show me the money. I'm always looking for it.
Okay.
No, but,
so are
but
you
not
retired?
Here.
Are you retired?
No, but not here. I'm not looking to make money here. I'm looking to do other things here.
So this book, I want to talk to you about this book in a minute. Okay, we'll get back to this photography book in a minute.
He's going to play something.
Yeah, Andrew's going. We've got off course here for a minute. Okay, Andrew, what are you playing?
With the effort to continue to always play you a new tune.
Yes.
Here's a song. Got together with a songwriter I met in at the Black Pot Festival, you might remember from some weeks ago.
Went to the
Black Pot Festival
right.
in Lafayette, which is like
Cajun
culture immersion, right, for a week. So she's like an old-time player from Washington. We got together and drank too much coffee and wrote this tune yesterday. On a street that leads to nowhere. Used to be a sign that said dead end. And every day at 5 o'clock we go there to the leaky pipes and something new to mend. You sweep the leaves from the driveway. I'll try and get the Chevrolet start. Feels like we just go around in circles, but it's a dance that we both know by heart. I've fallen in love with the toiling, falling for my best friend. And in the morning, we'll begin again. There'll always be another winter. Always gonna be more bills to pay. Maybe we'd get bored if it were easy. Have to pack up all our things and move away. Oh, but I love the torment. And I love my best friend. And in the morning to think there'd be a destination, some place that we'd arrive to in the end. We just pour ourselves a wine, forgive each other for our crimes, and in the morning we'll begin again.
It's pretty unbelievable that you
voice.
Can.
Isn't he
the greatest?
Oh.
I know.
Yeah.
It's amazing. You could write that with somebody else. It sounds so personal.
Yeah, well, you can't write with everybody.
Right.
I don't know. You don't start by writing. I remember I went to see Anthony Bourdain when he did the thing at the Mahalia Jackson. It was part of a speaker series. There were three folks, and David Sedaris was another, and I can't remember the other person. But I saw David Sedaris, and I saw Anthony Bourdain, and I kind of wondered what Anthony Bourdain would say or how this would work. Would there be some sort of MC asking him questions the whole time? He had a microphone and a bead of amber, and he kept us captivated for 2 hours. And one of the things that he said was, you know, people wonder how we get such honest reactions from... Or sentiments from the people that we interview, and it's because we don't turn the cameras on right away. We drink beer and we enjoy food and we just talk like human beings, and then we turn the red lights on later, you know. And I think and when you're co-writing, you got to do the same thing. You sit down, you have some coffee, and you talk about things, and you're not writing together yet. You're paying attention, like maybe
right.
some of those lines might matter for later, but. Yeah, you make it human somehow.
But being able to actually express yourself like that and be vulnerable and come up with how you're really feeling about something pretty deep, even if you're making it all up.
I don't know that there's a pound of flesh in there. It's just a little folky song, but...
But it sounds totally authentic.
Uh-huh. Good.
It?
Yeah.
Don't you think, guys?
Yeah. I thought it was beautiful.
Thanks. Thanks, y'all.
Do you want to play one more?
I think it's very conversational.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's
yeah.
just plain speak.
Totally.
Joy, you
want to
play one more before we get out of here?
Sure.
Okay, we're running out of time in a big way, so
Andrew.
Let's do it.
Andrew, third guest was Garrison Keillor.
That's right. I saw him, too.
Oh, my God. What a night.
Yeah.
Well, on the same night.
No, it was just a series. Ah, we had to buy tickets to each of them.
All right.
Okay, Joy.
This song is called Watching You Sleep.
Watching You Sleep.
Watching You Sleep.
Okay, can we turn that around?
Yeah.
Man, you are the real deal. Wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
Indeed.
Absolutely.
Authentic.
It was great.
That was really beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you.
That sounds like James Taylor.
Oh, wow.
That's what I would say. What do you guys think? Who does it remind you of?
Janice Ian.
Janice Ian. That was a good compliment.
Janice Ian. You know, I'm not familiar, but...
Really?
Dig in. You'll like it.
Yeah. Okay. What was that song she wrote? 17 or something it was called? That's 17. Oh, you should hear that song. It's
okay.
A great song.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you...
You've got a beautiful voice and you're a great songwriter. And
thank you so much.
You can really play and sing. Holy shit. That is quite a discovery, isn't it?
See you down at the grill,
yeah. Huh? Yeah. this Saturday.
Cafe and the Grill on Saturday afternoons. Yeah. When you say afternoon, what time is that?
4 o'clock. We usually hit at 4:30.
4:30. So 4:30 to 7 or something?
Say 4 o'clock. Cafe Negril opens at 4, but okay. We usually get the music started at 4:30.
So you're staying around 4:30. So we can see you till 4:30 till when?
4:30 to 7.
Is that outside in the courtyard?
It's a long time.
No. It's inside. There's also a restaurant. Cafe Negril is right across the street from that dog.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. It's there. Oh, that's so cool. Yeah.
It's got the big Bob Marley mural on the back.
Okay, yeah.
On the next DBA.
Right.
Yeah, next okay. Oh, yeah, so you can catch me there. And okay. I call it the listening room. I try to do most of my original music, and then I sprinkle some covers in there.
So if we don't get there, where else can we? Can find you online at joyclarkmusic.com.
Joyclarkmusic.com. You can find me there. Instagram at joyclarkmusic. Ah. Facebook joyclark. You can find me.
Very good. All right. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming down. I hope we get to see you again sometime.
I would love to come back. Yeah.
Would you?
Yeah.
How did you like your first podcast?
Sure.
Pretty good.
I will not say no.
Come on back. We'd love to have you back, wouldn't we, Andrew?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you two gentlemen are welcome to come back as well, because we hardly scratched the surface of Roger Johns, the Georgia Writer of the Year.
Georgia Author of the Year.
Georgia Author of the Year for 2018, whose books are Dark River Rising and River Secrets, and the new one, River of Alcohol. What's the new one going to be called?
At the moment, the working title is Wallace Hartman Book Number 3.
Okay, is it going to have the word
That's
river?
How you save it as a Word document on your...
I don't know.
Well, I'll come up with a title for you right now.
Probably River. I barely know her.
I'll suggest that.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
Does the publisher decide on the title, or do you decide on the title?
I have input. It's something that I and the editor I work with at St. Martin's Press, we brainstormed several ideas for a while, and it's just sort of a mutual thing you come to.
Well, thanks for coming all the way down from Atlanta or wherever the hell you live. Actually.
I had the best time. Thank you for having me on the show.
Good luck
I love
in
this.
Baton Rouge. It's the most interesting city I've ever been in. So you're going to love it.
I will.
I'm looking forward to it. I've never heard anyone say that. I'm really... And Joy's got both of her phones out here now. That's the weirdest thing I've seen in a while, too.
This one is all out of memory, so I can't have any apps on here. I'm tethering from this phone to this phone.
You really know what's going on. Okay. And author-photographer Thomas Cole has been here as well.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
Are you coming with Slash? Okay. But he is actually an author because he wrote Dreamweavers and Dreamweavers Come Again. Still don't remember the patterns of something.
Okay. I forget.
Right, something like that. But this book, which I just want to make one point before we get out of here. Mm. This book is called Standing in the Shadows. I mean, we make a lot of jokes around here, and these two bit a lot, but this book is really cool. It's called Standing in the Shadows, New Orleans in Focus. And one of the things I like about this book, first of all, it's beautiful and has great photos in it. And secondly, it's cheaper if you live here. It's
That's
$20
correct.
Bucks if you live in New Orleans.
That's correct.
And $28 if you live anywhere.
$20 in Louisiana.
I salute you for doing that, because there's so much of a tourist economy here that we get screwed as New Orleanians for paying more for all sorts of shit because we can't afford.
This book is the culmination of a lot of things.
That you're doing that.
And it's a gift to the people of New Orleans.
Heck yeah.
Thank you. Good job. Now, by the way, just in case you were wondering, Roger, New Orleans is a far more interesting city than Baton Rouge.
Yeah, but there's too many crime stories in New Orleans. You can't base it in an interesting...
You couldn't stand out by being a crime writer in New Orleans.
No.
Hey, before we get out of here, thank you very much to Basics Swim and Gym. We can get a full range of fashion swimsuits, workout, and yoga clothes with style. Basics Swim and Gym is right next to the lingerie store, Basics Underneath on Magazine Street near Jefferson Avenue. And thank you, too, to Hangover Destroyer, the only all-natural product that's medically proven to prevent a hangover, by the way. Ladies and gentlemen, go to the hdestroyer.com website, write happy hour on the coupon code, and you too can get 30% off of Hangover Destroyer and seize the dawn. And thank you too to the Positive Vibrations Foundation, who create and encourage community through the development and preservation of the arts, music, culture, and heritage. And if you'd like to be a member of our Patreon family, go to patreon.com and search for It's New Orleans Happy Hour, and you too can be a member of our Happy Hour family, where for as little as $1 a month, you get all sorts of free shit. I'm not quite sure what we're giving away, but something you get for free for $1 a month, which you can't do better than that. And we can also, we should have a link to your fan club as well, Roger.
RogerJohnsBooks.com.
RogerJohnsBooks.com. Yes. All the best looking young women are there.
Everybody's there.
Everybody's there. Thank you so much for joining us, everybody. That's been Happy Hour for another week. Our show is produced by Graham DePonte, Christian Underwood, Monique Pilar, our music producers, and Thomas Walsh is our technical director. Asher Griffith is our Facebook live feed director, who put this all on Facebook. If you listen to this as a podcast and you'd like to see what we look like, you can go to Facebook, our Facebook page, It's New Orleans, it's called, and take a look at the Facebook live video. And if you'd like to see photos of us, you can get these photos on our Facebook live page. I mean, on our Facebook page, It's New Orleans Facebook page, and also on our Instagram account and on Twitter and on all those. We're called at It's New Orleans. If you'd like to be on our show and you can sit around and drink alcohol for about an hour, drop us a line. Our address is on our website, itsneworleans.com. Our theme music was written by and is being played today by Mitch Foreman. You can check out many other Happy Hours and other shows we make around here, including Out to Lunch with Peter Ricciuti, live from Commander's Palace, and Louisiana Eats with Poppy Tooker, and our award-winning podcast about death called Death the Podcast. You can find all those anywhere you get podcasts. You can find other great Louisiana podcasts as well at itsacadiana.com and itsbatonrouge.la, the most exciting website on the internet. You can keep up with us on a bunch of time-sucking social media, as I told you already, and you can the photos that were taken, that you can find taken from the show, are on those places. They're taken today by Jill Lafleur, and you can find it, more of Jill's photos at lafleurphoto.com. If you listen to this podcast on your favorite podcast app, thank you for subscribing to us. Take a moment, if you've got one, to rate and review us. That helps other people find us. Our show is recorded live today at Wayfair on Ferret Street in Uptown New Orleans. Happy Hour is a production of I Know Broadcasting. For itsneworleans.com, for Andrew Duhon, everyone else around here, around the table at Wayfair, back at the office at I Know Broadcasting, thank you so much for joining us. I'm Grant Morris. I'll see you back here next week for more Happy Hour.